Harrison Holmby, we're finally hanging out at the happiest place on Earth.
I know, Alex Stewart, and we're excited to present episode 8 of The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. Today's episode covers what is perhaps the single most iconic ride in Disneyland, the Pirates of the Caribbean. And this attraction is so jam-packed with swashbuckling adventure and tales of the high seas that we actually had to split it up into two acts.
Yeah, and we're going to actually be riding this attraction with you folks. We're going to be exploring the incredible history of an amazing attraction. Now, just as a little bit of a roadmap, in the first act, we're going to be covering the queue for the attraction, the bayou area, and the first waterfall. And the second act will cover everything after that. So get ready for a two-part adventure and some pretty major action.
Hey, Al, are you almost done with that bread bowl filled with creamy and delicious clam chowder?
All finished, bud. Let's jump in line.
Whoa, Al, that line is insanely long. We're going to be waiting here until we turn into skeletons and we're installed into the attraction.
Dude, don't sweat it. They designed the loading process of Pirates to be so smooth that this attraction is claimed as the most efficient attraction in the park.
Aw, bummer. I wanted to be installed in the attraction as a skeleton.
Well, the bright side is there's tons of stuff to see as you wait in line for this attraction. I mean, for instance, the building that houses this thing, it's based on a famous building in New Orleans called the Cabildo.
Cabildo?
Is that what it says?
That's it. That's what it's called, is the Cabildo. I Googled it and double-checked. It's the Cabildo.
It's a weird name.
I know.
It's actually the place where the Lizzie...
the Lose... Now you don't know any words. The Cabildo undid you.
Wow, that's a rough one. It's the place where the Louisiana Purchase was signed way back in 1803.
The theming in New Orleans Square is so thorough. And you'll remember from our New Orleans Square episode that both the Louisiana Purchase and New Orleans Square cost about $18 million to open. And on top of that expense, Pirates cost $8 million. So Disney pulled out all the stops for this one. It was a really ambitious project.
Hey, I bet you that you didn't know from where we stand right here, you can see the flag on top of the building. And that flag has 30 stars.
Man, somebody must have forgotten there are 97 stars on the flag. What an embarrassing mistake.
So anyway, 30 stars is the number of stars the American flag had in 1850, which is the era in which New Orleans Square is set.
High five for good theming!
Woohoo!
And while we're looking up in that direction, notice the crest of initials set up in the wrought iron railing on the balcony to the right over the Bread Bowl restaurant.
W.D. and R.D.?
Yep. Those are the initials of Walt Disney and Roy O. Disney, Walt's brother, who is almost as responsible for Disneyland's creation as Walt was.
Oh, yeah, the initials are painted gold. Well, thankfully, this queue is moving quickly, and we're about to go under this enchanted bridge.
Walking under this bridge makes you feel like you're transported back to the hustle and bustle of romantic 1850s port town of New Orleans.
Now, the crazy thing is, this bridge actually didn't exist originally here. As the park grew and the number of guests that were coming in increased, they actually were kind of forced to put this bridge in. And so it really changed the entire landscape out in front of the attraction. Tony Baxter, Disney legend and former senior vice president of creative development in Walt Disney Imagineering, redesigned the queue so it went under this footbridge. Before that, the line for Pirates was so long it would block the entrance for Critter Country and New Orleans Square.
Get right out of town.
The line was so long because this attraction has been a favorite ever since it opened. Have I told you about this attraction's history?
Well, I think the line is just long enough that you have time.
That's perfect. Okay, here goes. Picture it. 1961, Anaheim, California. Some weird nautical cherub strums a memory harp.
What?
Just roll with it, Harry. Walt Disney had a fantastic idea for a new attraction for his park, a wax museum of famous historical pirates. Guests would walk through the immersive museum and learn about the fascinating history behind nautical battles starring famous pirates such as Captain Morgan, Captain Kidd, and New Orleans' own Jean Lafitte. Walt turned to Mark Davis to draw sketches for the museum.
Oh, Mark Davis, I know about him. What a legend. He was an incredible draftsman and character designer. I think he was one of Disney's 9 old men, and he helped design the Jungle Cruise, the Tiki Room, and tons of other famous Disney attractions, as well as the characters of Snow White, Bambi, Cinderella, Tinkerbell, and Cruella de Vil.
That's the one. It's pretty amazing that you know that right off the top of your head, bro. I'm impressed.
I'm a walking buck.
Walt knew that Mark Davis had the specific kind of vision he wanted for his pirate museum. Mark Davis went straight to work researching historical pirates, but he hit a wall fairly quickly. Most real pirates did not lead a glamorous or family-friendly lifestyle. They were ruthless murderers and thieves who lived short, wretched lives before dying from disease.
Al, that sounds like your Uncle Gert.
Don't remind me.
Hey, Al, it's your Uncle Gert here. Say, are you gonna finish the rest of that meat on that rib?
Needless to say, it wasn't exactly material for an attraction at Disneyland. So, Mark Davis started punching up his sketches with campy gags. Walt liked the direction Mark was taking, but Mark stopped working on the sketches because the attention of Wed Enterprises was directed at a major staple in Disney history, the 1964 World's Fair.
Ah, the World's Fair was such a to-do back then. Every major technology company wanted an exhibition at the World's Fair, and Walt Disney was always on the bleeding edge of technology.
Definitely, man, and Walt delivered in 1964. He had just finished opening his famous Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room in 1963 and was beginning to move into more advanced human-sized audio animatronics. The World's Fair was where Walt unveiled several classic Disney attractions for the first time. He presented prototypes of It's a Small World, the Carousel of Progress, the People Mover, and an incredible new attraction called Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln.
Yes, in 1964, people were stunned to see a life-sized, animatronic Mr. Lincoln, who was a boyhood hero of Walt Disney, deliver his famous speeches at the World's Fair. It was such a hit that Walt Disney wanted to make more attractions like it. By the way, listeners, if you know anyone who attended the 1964 World's Fair in New York City, drop us an email at thebacksideofwaterpodcast@gmail.com because we would love to talk to someone who attended this historic event.
Seriously, that would be a dream suite come true. Notice how I plugged in the dream suite. Hey, go listen to our last episode, the New Orleans Square episode, and you'll learn about what, Harry?
The sweet dream.
Oh, sweet dreams.
The dream suite. Yeah, I got you. I pulled one over on you.
Oh, you got me good that time.
Hey.
So Walt got his idea to replace the wax figures in his museum with moving pirates. He tasked Disney legend Blaine Gibson, who was the animator turned sculptor who built Mr. Lincoln, to make a whole cast of animatronic pirates.
Oh, cool. But, Al, how did Walt get the idea to make Pirates of the Caribbean a boat ride instead of a walkthrough attraction?
Well, Harry, it's a small world.
I know. Dude, the other day I saw this guy at a gas station. He looked just like George Washington. Like, what are the chances?
No, dude, I mean, Walt got the idea from It's a Small World.
Okay, but that dude really did look like George Washington. I asked him to autograph one of my dollar bills, and he got all huffy, and...
Dude, if you keep telling this story, I am literally going to die of boredom.
Fine. But I see where you're going. Walt wanted to make Pirates a boat ride like It's a Small World?
Exactly. It made the ride more exciting, and it made good business sense. A boat ride could handle many more passengers per hour than a wax museum could. But I have to back up and tell you about the incredible engineers who made the boat ride. The boats were drafted up by Aero Development, the company that engineered, built, and installed several classic attractions, including Mad Tea Party, Snow White's Adventure, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, and King Arthur's Carousel. Ed Morgan and Carl Bacon, the two founders of Aero Development, were apparently awesome to work with and are still highly regarded within Disney Imagineering. They also still hold the patent for the boat system that Pirates of the Caribbean uses.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, apparently they also worked with a talented young engineer named Bob Gurr, who would later be named a Disney legend. Well, wasn't Aero Development acquired by Wed Enterprises, or maybe it wasn't the whole thing?
I'm not entirely sure. You could be right.
But I don't doubt they still hold the patents. But when they were building this, they were working with a guy named Bob Gurr, and he went on to design most of the moving ride vehicles in Disneyland attractions. And this was really cool when I learned this. Later in life, he consulted with one Mr. Steven Spielberg to build a realistic T-Rex model for a movie called Jurassic Park. Don't you love it when you find connections like that, when you see the spirit of imagination that makes Disneyland so magical in other unexpected places?
That's pretty awesome. And for our listeners, I don't know if they're going to care about this or not, but folks, we are probably just as big of Jurassic Park fans as we are of Disneyland. And
We're huge dinosaur fans. Oh,
every
man.
Single year, we try to get together and watch it with one of our best buddies, Chris Simpson. And nobody else will watch it with us because between all three of us, we are able to quote literally the entire movie from beginning to end.
It would be torture for most people, but to us, it's just where it's at, and that's it.
It's an experience.
It really is.
So anyway, let's get back on track with this attraction.
Oh, I see what you did there. Tracks. The attraction has tracks. Well done.
I put the track in attraction.
I just got you off the track with that comment.
All right. Here we go. Let's track together here. Walt himself found inspiration for Pirates of the Caribbean from Treasure Island, the classic Robert Louis Stevenson book. A buccaneer story if I ever heard one. Anyway, Walt had a new direction for Pirates, and Mark Davis put animatronics and the boat ride into his concept art. The scope of the world Walt wanted to build was so large, he hired another man named Claude Coates to conceive and paint backgrounds for the attraction. Claude Coates was a Disney legend who helped imagine and build the settings for Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Alice in Wonderland, The Carousel of Progress, and It's a Small World. Then, Harriet Burns teamed up with sculptor Blaine Gibson to paint the animatronics, and Alice Davis began to work on costumes.
Oh my gosh, Al, there are so many names. Who are Harriet Burns and Alice Davis?
Well, let me tell ya. Alice Davis did the costumes for It's a Small World and developed the entire costume manufacturing process. She jokes that she, quote, went from costuming sweet, innocent children to dirty old men overnight. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, she was Mark Davis's wife.
Heck yes, power couple.
I know, and Harriet Burns was a painter and modeler and the first woman to be employed as a Disney Imagineer. She crafted a model of Sleeping Beauty's castle before the park opened, and she had such an eye for detail that Walt decided she would be perfect to put finishing touches on animatronics. So that's exactly what she did on Pirates.
And as the attraction unfolded, it started to look like a movie. So Wed Enterprises hired real actors to act out the script and model the animatronics after the actors' movements.
Dude, isn't that amazing? Hey, speaking of boats, it looks like this next boat is ours.
Oh, wait, before we get on, wasn't there something about the mural or something? These pirates that we passed by?
Oh, yeah. We got so caught up talking about all of the Disney history, I completely forgot. If you look behind us there, you're going to see those murals of the pirates that could come in. They replaced some of them with famous characters from the movies like Captain Jack Sparrow and Captain Barbossa. But you'll notice the last character that you walk by that are in those murals is a woman. And nobody really thinks much about it. But while I was working at Disneyland, it was during what Disney called the Year of a Million Dreams, which actually lasted, I think, 2 years. But her name was Jennifer Greenwell, and she lived in St. Petersburg, Florida. She actually won a trip for four people to Disneyland, and on her first trip, she was dressed in pirate costume and drawn by Imagineer Jim Crouch. From that drawing, a mural was painted in the entryway of the ride.
No way.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. And just so you guys all know, that's a direct quote from the Pirates of the Caribbean wiki. I didn't know the name of the woman, but I saw while I was...
That would be crazy if you knew that offhand.
Yeah, it's her name.
Just think about it every night before I go to sleep.
Jennifer Greenwell, you're the luckiest woman alive.
But yeah, the crazy thing is, when I was eating backstage during my Disneyland shifts, they would have this Disneyland Insider video playing, and it showed the process of her getting chosen and modeling for the mural and the mural being painted, and that just really stuck out to me. I remember that being a super cool experience to see somebody being immortalized on the Disney walls.
No kidding. And I love that Disney is just thinking about, like, okay, how can we go above and beyond what anybody expects just to make somebody, you know, let's paint a guest's face on this mural, or let's give a guest a stay in the dream suite. Or there's so many things that, you know, if you're at the right place at the right time, Disney is just, they will move the earth for you.
Exactly. And that's the crazy thing to me, is the fact that most places would probably just, you know, put that person up there for a couple of years or whatever. But even walking through it now, almost 10 years later, that mural is still up there. So she's going to be up there for a pretty long time. And imagine walking your family through the line at the Pirates of the Caribbean and saying, oh, there I am.
I can't imagine. Or like taking your kids there and then they suddenly see their, you know, their mom in the mural.
Yeah, that would freak me out. Hey man.
Hey, how many? Oh, are you the Backside of Water group?
We sure are.
Well, I was informed that you and your listeners are going to have your own boat.
That's amazing. Harry, are we becoming like quasi-celebrities?
No, we just heard that you guys never stop talking, and we didn't want you disturbing guests while they enjoy the attraction.
I'm cool with that. It makes a ton of sense, actually.
Okay, so you two are going to be in row one. Will the rest of your boat be enough for space for your listeners?
Well, judging that according to our Nielsen ratings, we have 13
listeners. 1,000 listeners, and that should be all right. Now, we don't want to lose our chance to get a private trip. He doesn't have to know that we only have 13 listeners, and congratulations on getting the extra one over the past month. But where did you get those numbers? The Nielsens don't even take podcasts into account.
My cousin, Bernie Nielsen? Dude, he takes all media into account with his rating. And sadly, we get a really low rating.
Al, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard come out of your mouth.
Whatever you say, man, but Bernie predicted the fall of the 90210 reboot, and he was spot on.
Just get in the boat before it leaves without us.
Ahoy, mateys. For a safe voyage, be sure to stay seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the boat. And watch your children. And remember, no flash pictures. Now off with you.
Now, that area we were just in, the boat loading zone, is called Lafitte's Landing in honor of the famous historical pirate Jean Lafitte.
Okay, hold on. It's pronounced Lafitte.
Well, not in my world. Welcome to Harry's Corner. You can see the sign right above us as we're pulling away. Jean Lafitte. You know what? Why can't French people just spell things the way they're said? That's all I'm going to say.
I agree.
It's a beautiful language.
Je le sais so sweet, je le sois.
Thanks, Steve Martin. We had a guest star of Steve Martin on this podcast.
Omelette du fromage.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that just totally destroyed any, and I can't remember at all how to pronounce his name, Jean Lafitte. I'm from Texas. This is how we do other languages here. So you can see the Jean Lafitte. Jean Lafitte? Jean Lafitte.
Don't worry about it. Just go with it.
He was born in France, but then moved to New Orleans. And he and his brother Pierre had an enormously successful smuggling operation that was overtaken by the American Navy.
Wait, is that the old Navy?
No, the American Navy, but...
Old Navy.
Yeah.
Old Navy.
I hear they have some good specials there. I can't wait to get in there.
50% off. Dude, and the Portlandia folks are even jumping on bandwagons there.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I try to ignore every Old Navy commercial. But Andrew Jackson agreed to pardon Lafitte? If he helped defend New Orleans against the British in early 1815, which he did. There is still a lot of speculation about Jean Lafitte's life and death, and he's a bit of a French pirate tall tale. You should web search him, dude, because I could take the whole ride to talk about his pirateering. It's pretty cool, though, huh?
I agree. I don't know how to spell his name now to Google search it after all that conversation.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of Google is you can put something just like Jean Lafitte, and it's like, did you mean Jean Lafitte Pierre? Yeah, I did. Thanks,
that is
Google.
Very true. That's very true. Dude, this is my favorite part of the attraction, drifting through the quaint, quiet Louisiana bayou. Oh, and I love the fireflies.
Originally, they modified Christmas lights to make the firefly effect. I think the swamp in the beginning really helped set the tone for the ride. I didn't realize how much I missed it until I rode the attraction at Magic Kingdom in Orlando, and it wasn't there.
And the way the black expanse seems to reach into infinity above us really makes you feel like you're riding an old keelboat through the bayou on a cool spring evening. It's also super cool how the Blue Bayou restaurant is on one side of us and the swamp is on the other. Oh, the Blue Bayou over yonder opened on the same day as Pirates of the Caribbean attraction, back in March 18th of 1967.
Yeah, and Pirates was an e-ticket attraction, which meant it cost 75 cents to ride. And that would be about $5.50 today. So about 1 million people rode it every month. So if my maths are right, the attraction paid for itself in about 11 months. It's a savvy way to spend your doubloons, Walt.
Indeed. Dude, take a look up on that porch.
Oh, I love the old banjo-playing hillbilly.
You know, I loved him even more when I heard that he played a major role in the storyline foundations of this attraction.
What do you mean?
All right, so this story was told to me while I was working at the Disney University as a trainer for new Disneyland cast members. This here hillbilly isn't an ordinary hillbilly. He's actually a pirate.
What?
Yep, he was a pirate that managed to escape the hard-drinking, hard-partying, hard-living life of piracy and grow old out here in the midst of the weeping willows of the bayou. And notice that as we pass him, we begin our grand ascent into the world of piracy. This sequence was intentional, too. Essentially, we're going back into the memories of this pirate and his experience with his pirate mates. And in a roundabout way, he's also telling us writers the story of Captain Blood.
Captain who?
I won't go into detail of who Captain Blood is on this episode, but I will say this. Captain Blood plays a very huge role in connecting this attraction and the Haunted Mansion.
Oh my gosh, dude, I'm so excited. I didn't even know that.
I know, but I want to save that story for the Haunted Mansion episode, as it's pretty awesome and may spoil some of the fun of the Haunted Mansion for us.
Okay. So let me get this straight. The hillbilly we just passed is actually a retired pirate, and now we are on a journey into his memories of piracy?
According to what I heard from my Disney training, that's the story.
That makes the attraction so much better. That's amazing.
Dude, that's why this place is the most magical place to work ever.
We come seek an adventure in salty old pirates, eh? Sure, you'll come to the proper place. But keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight. With both hands, if you please. There'll be squalls ahead.
Dude, I bet I'm gonna get wet on this waterfall. I always end up in a seat that gets wet.
Don't even worry about it, dude. It's a clear water ride.
What?
You remember from the Jungle episode, Disneyland has two types of water, dark and clear, and clear water is for rides such as It's a Small World, Pirates of the Caribbean, and Splash Mountain, and dark water starts in the rivers of America, flows into Storybook Land, then flows into the moat around Sleeping Beauty Castle, right? Then it flows out into the Jungle Cruise, where it's piped back into the rivers of America!
Dude, this song!
I never want anything more in life.
The lyrics for this song were written by Xavier Atencio, who also wrote the script for the attraction, and George Bruns composed the music.
Oh, wow. I recognize George Bruns as the guy that did the Jungle Book soundtrack and the Ballad of Davy Crockett. But who is this Xavier Atencio guy? He's probably another Disney legend, right?
So I think Disney just made everyone who worked on this attraction a Disney legend.
They deserve it, man. This ride straight up shivers me timbers.
Oh man, so Xavier Atencio, or X as his friends and co-workers called him, was a Disney animator. One day, Walt transferred him to WED Enterprises. X showed up at WED and had no idea what he was supposed to do. Walt finally called him and said, "I want you to write the script for Pirates of the Caribbean attraction." X couldn't believe it. He had never scripted anything before. The first scene X wrote was the bride auction scene, and Walt said, "Keep going, this is good." Then X came up with the idea of giving the attraction a theme song and presented the idea to Walt. Walt lit up, and instead of suggesting the Sherman Brothers, he suggested George Bruns as a songwriter. And the result of their collaboration was this. Glorious masterpiece.
Walt's talent for matching people up with just the right job was legendary. Sometimes he'd ask people to do something totally unrelated to what they were doing, and usually, to their own surprise, they would knock it out of the park. He had an incredible ability to recognize talent.
You know, Harry, I'm always trying to be my own Walt Disney, trying to push myself creatively in new directions.
Oh, that explains your concept of a churro dog.
You know, I was hoping you would bring that up on the show so people would be exposed to it. Somebody should wrap a churro around a hot dog. It just makes sense.
Dude, you are a brave visionary. I accepted a long time ago that my only talent is remembering Darkwing Duck episodes, but it's pretty dark, Al. I don't remember it being this dark.
Dude, you're right. Yeah, something's
not right.
Something's
not right.
What's happening?
Something's not right here.
the adventure, the suspense. Will Al and Harry make it out of the piratey peril they now find themselves in? Will Al make it to the end of the attraction without getting hungry? Tune in next time for Act 2 of Episode 8, The Pirates of the Caribbean. In the meantime, folks, if you enjoyed this episode, please take some time to write a review on iTunes or Podomatic. Comment on our Instagrams or tweet on our Twitters. We love hearing from our fans. And, of course, don't forget to subscribe. And as our imperiled hosts say, as you exit, please watch your step and watch your head. And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language.